For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that embraces the daddy era of Dallas Stars hockey. It's time to do a little stargazing in light of the back-to-back. Got a short bench tonight, so just me and Mark. Mark, how's it going?
I'm still on the bench and there are only two of us?
What? I mean, I think my implication was that I'm on the bench as well, and it's just the two of us. I guess KT as well. Okay. KT is here.
KT's always, thank goodness.
Yeah, this thing would be nasty without all of the fine-tuning she does in post. We would sound like a couple real chuckleheads.
Well, I have a question for you to lead off. We're kind of missing Taylor 2.0. She's been a fixture the last couple of weeks. So she kind of came in right at the trade deadline. is she daddy or is she domi?
I mean, in the context, yeah, I think she's had an immediate impact. That's for sure.
And that doesn't really answer the question. No, it doesn't.
She's daddy. I think we have to ask her, right? I think she gets to pick. She's either daddy or domi.
Well, I'm going to go on a limb and say she's domi because she's definitely high event on both the offensive end and the defense.
She's definitely high event. You got to keep your eyes on the podcast while she's working with the puck for sure.
You and I, we know how to keep it against the boards and tighten up on defense.
But I was going to say, does that make us Foxa? And
we're kind of the foxes of the podcast Stars world. Yes.
Foxa and Lindell of the podcast world. Yep. We swear that we contribute. We've got somewhere in the back, we've got the metrics to back it up, but we're not going to show you what those metrics are, and we can't really talk if they're proprietary.
Yep, exactly. So speaking of which, we have Daddy and Domi. How are things going in our trade deadline world?
I mean, we talked about this. I'm feeling personally vindicated. I don't know about you, but in the buildup to, you know, basically all season, we've been talking about how the Stars have gotten relatively lucky with health, and in particular health amongst a relatively thin offensive core. And then they go out and they get some depth at the trade deadline, and immediately, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, immediately run into some trouble. And not only are the results themselves fantastic, and I believe Domi has, since he's joined the team, he's got a goal and two helpers, although I'm giving him double credit for the overtime winner in Seattle. That was, I said on Twitter, that was a saucer so delicious that the Pentagon's going to deny it exists. It's just insane. And then Dadonov is doing even better. And I believe his totals are, he's been with the team a little bit longer, but he's got three goals and five assists in his time. And I think he's been with the team for eight games. So in a vacuum, those two have provided offense. And that offense is even more critical because they're providing it at a time when some of the other Stars are dropping out of the lineup a little bit.
Yeah, well, we're getting depth scoring, and this is the Dallas Stars that can roll three lines that can score. So I think it's been pretty deadly. The only concern I have right now is apparently Domi is killing off his line mates. With Sagan takes a blade to the thigh, and now Marchman has some knee-on-knee contact that's sending him back to Dallas.
It's like everybody's the drummer for Spinal Tap. So like I said, we're going to get into the injury outlook in just a second, but just talking about performance on the ice, I agree. Now they have three lines that can score. And the other thing that I really love is, you know, Pete DeBoer is a coach. If you look at his previous habits, he is not an orthodox line runner, right? He's not a guy that has a first line, second line, checking line, you know, fourth line, right? He's a guy that likes to run multiple units that can do it all. So not only does Dallas now have three units that seem to be able to generate offense, but it's pushed Ty Dellandrea into a kind of flex position, like technically the fourth line. But, you know, we've learned over the first half of the season, Dillandre doesn't look out of place on the Benn line. He doesn't look out of place on the Sagan line. So, you know, one of the things I've harped on at least is there's a value in depth, but part of that value is flexibility. And all of a sudden, with everybody healthy, of course, Dallas can go into a game and if just throwing a dart, right? If the Benn line just isn't clicking, right, and they need a couple of shifts, you can slot Dillandre in there, give him a different look, right? You can all of a sudden mix and match personnel in offensive roles beyond, you know, starting Radek Foxa as the center of a scoring line. And that's significant, I think.
Well, I think it is. And you can kind of see what happened in the Seattle series. The first game, it was kind of the first off night that the Benn Johnston and Dadonov line had. And there were other lines that went off, but then you take a look at the second game and the Johnston line was really the line that was driving play.
Johnston, so he was so good.
Yeah. And so all of a sudden, you know, Seattle makes some minor adjustments and it still doesn't pay off for them because Dallas doesn't need the same guys to show up every single time. And that's never going to happen. You know, everybody has a little bit of an off day now and then. And Dallas can survive it when they run three lines like that.
They can. And that's also something you start when you know, as we pivot to talking about playoff hockey and, you know, higher aspirations, that's the sort of thing that becomes even more important is once you hit the playoffs, it's not just about somebody having an off night. It could also be about a matchup that you really can't, you know, if a team has a particular game plan to say, okay, we're just not going to let, you know, we're not going to let Jamie Benn's group beat us. Well, okay, you know, Dallas's answer to that is now a shrug and say, all right, well, I guess it'll just have to be, you know, I guess it'll just be Daddy's group, or I guess it'll just be Domi or Tyler or whoever. You know, it's this is a team that now no longer has just one line or even just two lines. They've got a collection of things that can kind of, you know, attack you in different ways in different places.
Right. And you kind of avoided the elephant in the room, which is everybody's going to be out there trying to figure out what they're going to do about Pavelski, Hintz, and Robertson. And and so now it's like it used to be you shut that line down or you go back to even the Sagan, Benn, and Radulov days. Dallas always had this one fabulous line and then a bunch of
hope.
Exactly. You crossed your finger and hope you got a little scoring out of something other than the top line.
Yeah, you get a random Cody Eakin goal. Maybe Antoine Roussel manages to put one. Yeah, somebody else gets something. Yeah. You know, the power play gets hot, and then you lean on the Benn Sagan, you know, Spezza / Radulov unit, and that's the path. That is the path to victory, not a path.
Right, and that doesn't even go to the point where you may try and shut them down, but they're just as likely to light up anyway. So you may not be able to shut off the first line, and if you can't do that, then you're in serious trouble because one of the second or the third line is going to come along and do some damage to the guys that can't be the defensive focus.
And I mean, I think there's no better illustration of this than, and it was a bit, it was, you know, not exactly playoff quality opposition, but this is a team that hung 10 goals on the Buffalo Sabres and only Radek Foxa scored twice.
Yeah.
Like that's,
did you ever think you would say that?
No, that sequence of words is, you know, that's one of those, put that into ChatGP and it's just like, nah, I'm not going to do that, bro. Sorry. Does not compute, but it's funny and it's also amazing because they scored 10 goals, but that is what depth does. And, you know, that was an incident where they didn't shut the first line down, right? Hintz had a goal, Suter had a goal, Robertson had some assists, right? They didn't shut the first line down. They didn't shut the power play line down. They didn't shut the Benn line down, right? Johnston, Jamie both got goals. And then all, you know, Dadonov as well. And then also the depth players chipped in along the way. So that's sort of when we talk about, or at least when I talk about how the impact of adding it, and it's not like Max Domi and Dadonov are, you know, high end, you know, top tier. They didn't go out and get Timo Meier, right? But the impact of having two players of that type on this roster has been just exponential so far.
Yeah, I mean, what you got was you got a playmaker, which was something that was sorely lacking in this team. And then with Dadonov, you kind of got a superior Swiss Army knife. He certainly has scoring ability. He's much more solid on the defensive end, and he's very used to fitting into a line. And to tell you the truth, I think he's underrated as a forechecker. I was watching the game, the second game against Seattle, and it just struck me how many tendencies that he has that are very similar to early on Alexander Radulov.
Yeah.
He goes a little crazy now and then. He's the guy who's going to just kind of toss that puck into the crease from behind the net, hoping that somebody's there. And ultimately, if he's playing with creative people, they'll be there.
And it's, I think that's especially important for the Stars team, who does not have, this isn't a team that sits on top of a stout defense and then counterpunches. So having players that can be aggressive on the forecheck, generate offense on the forecheck, generate pressure on the forecheck. There are multiple ways to play defense. And when you don't necessarily excel is the wrong word, because this is a very good defensive team. But when your strengths aren't doing it in your own zone, the ability to kill shifts in the offensive zone, even without the goals that have so far come with it, that becomes super valuable, because every time the forecheck disrupts a breakout, that's pressure that doesn't reach the defense, or pressure that doesn't, reach Ottinger, which is a good thing, right? It's a different way to solve a problem.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of the interesting thing about Domi coming in with Sagan, because it's created this line that their defense against people running the cycle on them is to have Marchment and Domi out there cherry picking.
Yeah.
And it's real high event, because they could very easily just get dominated and scored on by a cycle game. But you better make sure you score, because if you don't, your defender is going to end up giving up odd man rushes. And both Marchman and especially Domi, I think, have the ability to score off those chances.
Yeah. And then, the cherry picking thing, right? And by doing that, one, those goals help. Two, as long as those goals are coming, you have to worry about it and you have to account for it. And that's the sort of thing that it might help you directly, right? Somebody gets a breakaway, somebody scores a goal. It might help you indirectly, meaning all of a sudden you can't pinch quite as aggressively, and you can't, it makes it harder. We've talked about Dallas is a team that can struggle to defend the cycle. If you can't solve that problem by just winning the puck on a board battle, which they don't necessarily always do, you can solve it by keeping the defense one or two steps further into the neutral zone or closer to the blue line. If they have to worry just a little bit about getting burned, they've got to account for it. And that may be the one or two moments that you need that's going to get a puck over the blue line instead of resulting in a defensive keep, right? So that's the sort of thing you can, again, if it works, and that's going to be the calculus with Domi and, to a lesser extent, Dadonov, but the calculus with the two of them is going to be they can outgood their bad when it comes to events, and that's one of the ways they're going to do it.
Yeah, and especially with Domi, and as somebody who's watched a lot of Stars hockey here over the last couple of years, you've gotten so used to having these low event players in the lineup, and when you get somebody who's just high event chaos, we're going to gamble that our guy is going to cherry pick better than you're going to be able to cycle us. I mean, when was the last time you could even say that about a Stars team? It has to go back to pre-Hitchcock day.
I was going to say, is that Lindy Ruff?
It kind of is. And it's in a microcosm. It's not the whole team that's doing it, but it's a line that's doing it. And that's another wrinkle that still feeds into this whole, we have three lines that can score, but it's not just three lines who can score. It's three lines who kind of score in different ways.
Yes. Yeah. I love that point, because you're exactly right. The, Jamie Benn's group does work quite a bit on the cycle. They've got, Johnston, of course, is kind of speedy, shifty, but with Jamie Benn, it's about getting to the net front, getting those shots, getting that pressure. Then you have the kind of passing interplay, high skill game, with Hintz as the sort of speed guy unlocking it all at the top line, that are just going to dazzle you into submission. And what we've seen so far, and it's a woefully short sample size because of the injuries we keep alluding to, is, when you've got Sagan and Marchment and Domi going, it's chaos ball, right? You've got, Sagan is an underrated passer, in my opinion, and he's got the big shot. You've got definitely a thinking passer in Domi. And then Mason Marchment is just sort of bull in a china shop, right? And those are very different looks. It's very difficult. You defend those lines three entirely different ways.
Yeah, and I would argue that it in many ways unlocks Miro Heiskanen's game, because Miro isn't the guy who's going to make that, you know, he's not the guy who's going to thread the pass through two people's legs under a stick to find somebody who's breaking to the net. He's going to make the smart play, and he's going to do it very well. But if he has a chaos agent on the other end who can finish, all of a sudden he's going to start racking up assists, and I think we've seen that.
Yeah, I mean, 44 in 64 games, right? He's up to 54 points, which is fantastic. It's what we'd, as fans, and I'm sure the team, would hope to see from him. And I think you're right. It's he's almost a conductor out there, yep. Right? You chaos is good, and you want the chaos and the forwards kind of get things churning, but you still need to have at least some ability to exert control, right? To maintain possession, you know, to cycle, to hit the. You still have to be able to kind of harness it. And it's almost, just because I've children of that age, Heiskanen almost with that particular line being the Sagan, Domi, you know, Marchman or Delandre or whomever line, almost reminds me of like the chaperone on a grade school field trip, right? And just kind of not necessarily controlling what's going on because you can't, but at least making sure everybody's moving from exhibit to exhibit and not losing anyone along the way.
Right, and keeping people interested in the fact that they're on a field trip and it's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like the analogy, and it's like Miro is the adult in the room, if you will.
Yeah.
And so he's the one who's going to calm things down on the back end to make up for anybody's mistakes on the front end, and he's going to do the smart thing so that other people can maybe not necessarily. Yeah. The exact smart thing, because this team has gotten so used to overthinking the game and just doing things in robotic fashion that it's taken all of the creativity out of the game. And if Miro's running that, what you end up getting is a stagnant power play and various things that we've complained about over the years. But if you add some chaos in there, all of a sudden those nice normal things that Miro's doing everywhere on the ice just make everything better.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite examples of what you're saying, and also before getting into it as well, this is not to downplay the brilliance of Miro Heiskanen. The implication here is not that he is some kind of plotter. He's just a different cat, man, as you say. But one of the best examples of what you're saying, I think, is the overtime winner in the first game against Seattle. And, you know, you have a chance coming at the Stars one direction, right? And then they go back and Domi makes just an audacious play. You know, the backhand, you know, stratospheric saucer, right? And which is a, you know, it's difficult to pull off, so credit there, but it's also one of those plays that not every player in the league is going to think to do that. It's a non-standard motion to think, oh, I've got two guys between me and my, you know, my teammate. A lot of guys are so programmed to either cycle it back, right, push it, especially in overtime now, throw it back into the neutral zone, maintain possession, or throw it behind the net, right? Do something safe and not make a mistake. And it's you don't want everybody to not be thinking. It's good to have players that think that way. It's also good to have a guy like Domi who's going to say, you know what? Instead, what if I throw this puck into, you know, into row Z and have it land somewhere in a dangerous spot and see what happens? And then you marry that to bring this back to kind of where I started talking about Miro Heiskanen and you know, let's not downplay his brilliance. That puck didn't hit the ice. You know, lost in the audaciousness of Domi's pass is the fact that Heiskanen knocked it out of the air and into the top corner. And that, I think, to me, that illustrates what you're saying, and that, you know, Domi did something audacious and system breaking, which enabled Miro's kind of brand of fluid, consistent, you know, general excellence to score a goal.
Right. And I'd even take it further back to say that the brilliance of Miro was not only the finish, it was being in a place where he could accept the pass.
Yeah.
Because why in the world would you anticipate that the puck was going to come there? And the only type of person who's going to be there is somebody who sees that that's an opening and is going to go hard to the net, but also somebody who's going to be comfortable enough with their own game to know that if the puck doesn't get there, they're going to be fast enough to be able to get back and get into a defensive structure that's not going to allow an odd man rush going the other way.
And frankly, to add one more to it, somebody that's being coached in a way that says, you know what, there's a level of trust there, right? Take the chance and get back. You know, there are players that are, you know, either not trusted enough or too afraid or for, you know, many, many reasons, good and bad. There are players that aren't going to step up like that because something bad might happen versus players that are going to step up like that because something good might happen.
Yeah. Well, and also just side note, interesting. It's Miro's been on the ice for a lot of the overtimes this year, taking a lot of minuses on those. It's interesting that the two guys who end up bringing the creativity and get the win there, are Dodonov and Domi. There might be a lesson there to think that maybe we haven't been thinking about this whole process.
I mean, it's probably, and to kind of bring that back to the general Stars and to further the point, you know, we've talked 2 weeks in a row now about kind of these show me stretches of games for the Dallas Stars. And we've talked at length about, you know, kind of some of the other teams in the conference catching up and getting hot and all of that. All of a sudden, Dallas is 7-2-1 in their last 10. They've won three in a row. They're a plus 54 goal differential. The next closest team in the conference is plus 32. And yeah, ringing 10 up on Buffalo helps that, but they are 22 goals better offensively than the next closest team in the conference. So it's time to start thinking about this as a very, very good team versus just a team on a heater, I think.
Well, and I think you can go back to the net as well and say, this is all happening when Jake Oettinger is playing, I would consider for him probably average goaltending. He has not had to stand on his head to get us to that record.
And I'm glad you said that, because that's in fact he hasn't. And this is also really funny, because this to me is why Jake Oettinger is elite, right? So top line stats, Jake Oettinger is sitting on a 2.4 goals against average and a 920 save percentage for the season. Holistically, elite numbers. That's what you want, right? That's a good goaltender. That's a guy you can win with. Insert, you know, hockey platitude here. What I think really separates Jake Oettinger is in the win against Colorado, he had a 914 save percentage, three goals against. The next three games, 865 against Calgary, 862 against Buffalo, 903 against Seattle that first game. So he won two of those. But, you know, he had a very good game against Colorado, and by his standards or really anyone else's, he wobbled, you know, against Calgary, Buffalo, and then Seattle, right? So, you know, warning signs, question mark, backups hurt, question mark, time to get a refresher, question mark. What do you think, and Mark, you may know this off the top of your head, but what do you think his save percentage was in the second game against Seattle?
Ooh, let's see. They gave up 22 shots. I'm going to guess somewhere just under 9.
It was 929.
Oh, wow. Is that big? Okay.
Yeah. So my point being that if you look at the entire season, the numbers are great. If you look at the stretches when he's been down, he has been able to consistently get himself, you know, in the 914 against Colorado followed another stretch. He was 953. He was 826 in a game against Chicago, then 953. The next game against Vegas, he was 762 in that overtime loss to Vancouver, then 900 against Arizona, then 914. So he is a player that has not let, you know, no goalie escapes a season unscathed. But he is a guy that if you look at his game logs and his stat by stat, it doesn't turn into a thing. He has a bad game and then he has a good game. And the good games outweigh the bad games by a lot. And all of this. And so, like I said, this it's part of this. I think when we talk about, just to bring it back to the impact of Domi and Haskin and everything we're talking about, I think the reason that all of this comes together is you've got, you know, when we talked about this one before Letton got his head caved in and hurt, we talked about this in the Ben Bishop era. This is a team that can afford to take some chances and to introduce a little bit of chaos because there's a guy at the back that's going to be able to handle it. And instead of, as previous iterations of the Stars, instead of kind of minimizing that and taking the win of a good goaltender and just kind of leaning into the strength, this is a team that's saying, okay, we're comfortable if it blows up in our face a couple of times, because we're getting 926 a lot more often than we're getting 860.
Yeah, I fully agree. And the thing is, I'm sure this is eye test only, but Oettinger raises his game when he's playing a big game. And so I think if you took a look at how he has performed with those metrics against the top teams in the league, you're going to find those numbers are superior to what the average numbers are.
Yeah, I mean, this is just, you know, because I've got a couple of I'm going to cherry pick a couple of games because they're in front of me, right? But 926 and 903 and back to back against Seattle. He did 953 against Vegas, 969 against Minnesota, 919 against Boston, 974 against Minnesota, right? These are teams he shut out Vegas, 935 against the Rangers. You know, these are teams.
They're the playoff teams.
Yeah. So I think, again, I don't have the comprehensive stats in any more in front of me than you do, but it certainly, as I just skim through the list of games he's played this season, he seems to show up when he needs to show up, when there's something to prove.
Okay, how about we go off and talk about something that we haven't had to talk a lot about
lately? Yeah, we'll do that. We're going to take a very quick break to say hi to our sponsors, then we're going to come back with a little bit. Yeah, then we'll pivot to some of the other news going on around the team. You know, Mark, people get hurt from car accidents, medical malpractice, and other personal injury accidents, but they never call an attorney. They leave thousands of dollars in medical bills and lost wages on the table that could otherwise be covered, and instead, just take the insurance company's word. This is silly when you could just call Robert Greening at Greening Law. Greening and his Green team are fierce legal competitors for you against the insurance companies. Consultations are free, so you have nothing to lose. And there are no hourly attorney fees either. They only get paid if you recover.
Right? These folks definitely need to call Robert Greening and the Green Team.
Sure do. So remember, if you've been hurt in an accident, been a victim of medical malpractice, or have been hurt on a business's premises, call the Green Team at Greening Law in Dallas, Texas at 972-934-8900 now. They will fight your legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal. Greening Law, Office Dallas, Texas. All right, and we're back, and in honor of the Green Team and personal injury, we're going to talk about personnel injury. And as you were saying, this isn't something that the Dallas Stars have had to deal with a ton over the course of the season, but there are some bodies out of the lineup right now, Mark. Which one would you like to start with?
Well, I was going to just kind of segue through and talk a little bit about Scott Wedgwood, who is back skating and hopefully back fairly soon. You know, I think we've seen Ottinger play a whole lot. We're recording on Tuesday night before the Vancouver game. So I think Matt Murray's supposed to draw in for his second game of the year tonight. But it'd be kind of nice to get Wedgwood back in and get Ottinger a bit of rest before the playoffs start.
Yeah, and we talked about this earlier, right? It's Ottinger is playing great, but it's time to start thinking about the playoffs. And as great as Jake Ottinger is playing, he's had 51 starts this year, and he's a young kid. And so 51 games played, 50 starts. He's a young kid, you know, not a ton of miles yet, but Dallas is near the top of the conference. There's a little bit of a padding there. You would like to start finding some opportunities to rest him down the stretch here, just to make sure that you have the guy that you need when the postseason rolls along, I think.
Yeah, and here I think he's tied for top in the league with Hellebuck and Soros, I believe. Interesting that they're all in the Central, but you know, you'd hate to be in Winnipeg's situation where they kind of need to ride Hellebuck. Where I think the Stars have a little bit of leeway here, where they can do some resting and still feel comfortable about where they are in the playoff race. And I'm also kind of interested in seeing Matt Murray back down with Texas, because Texas has been trying to ride Remy Poirier, and he's done very well, but he's played 7 AHL games, and I don't know that we want that to be the guy who has to lead us in a long cup.
No, and you don't want that for the goaltender, and you also don't want that from a comfort standpoint, right? Different goaltenders play the position differently. You know, they might like shots different ways, angles, they play rebounds different. It's different playing in front of Ottinger than it is playing in front of Wedgwood. And as we learned from the bubble playoff run, right, you need to be able to, you hope you don't necessarily have to, but you need to be able to switch and have a level of comfort. So there's the obvious challenge of not having you know, Wedgwood available, which is you run the risk of overplaying Ottinger. But then you have the secondary risk is if you never play with Scott Wedgwood, and then all of a sudden you need to play with Scott Wedgwood, are you introducing unnecessary risk, right?
Yep. No, fully agree. Let's kind of kick it forward a little bit. Domi's destroyed his line.
Yeah, I mean, he's just running them. They're all the drummer for Spinal Tap right now. Yeah,
exactly. So Tyler Sagan, I think from everything I'm hearing, we dodged a bullet on that one. He does have a laceration, but it didn't click anything vital in his thigh. So it's just a rehab and making sure that you aren't going to be pulling out stitches if you get into real strenuous activity.
Yeah, and I think we all had flashbacks to the Achilles injury a couple years ago, and oh, that, at least it. For me, that left a mark.
Yeah, and who was it? Was it Sean who was saying something just today about the GM meeting and discussions about Kevlar being used throughout the league more, maybe making a rule to do that, similar to what they did with face masks or.
I mean, it's certainly worth considering, right? Because these skates are literally razor sharp, right? Yep. And, you know, like you said, it's the line from DeBoer, I think, is that it's not serious in the sense, like you said, it appears that he's avoided any kind of serious structural, you know, no tendons, no ligaments, nothing got sliced that's going to, you know, send him into surgery or whatever. But at the same time, I think DeBoer had some wry comment about, you know, he's day to day, but he's not skating yet, which should tell you how close he is, right? This isn't something he's, you know, not going to play in Vancouver. I don't believe, as I watch the pregame here on my other screen, but you know, it's going to have to heal, and he's going to have to get back. And as much as they dodged a bullet, he's going to miss a couple of games. And that is then compounded by, there was a knee on knee last night, and Mason Marchment went back to Dallas. So he's also now out of the lineup.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, cross your fingers on that one. He was just starting to get on a bit of a heater there. So, we waited a long time to get Mason Marchment being Mason Marchment, and to have him go down at this point has to be much more frustrating to him than it would be to us.
I mean, he's finally scoring, right? He had that epic, 32 game goalless streak, finally got back into the good news, and now he's out again. And I don't have as much, I think he's still in the evaluation stage. And sorry, they're saying upper body, which is strange because I definitely thought it was a lower body injury. So
I think that's wrong. I think it is a lower body injury. It was knee on knee.
We'll have this emphasizes that we don't quite know what's wrong or how long he's going to be out yet. They're going to have to get through a pretty tough back to back against a Minnesota team that's been at least a little bit better lately. They're not, you know, playoff bound by any stretch of the imagination, but they've won four in a row.
Whoa. Minnesota not playoff bound?
Or sorry, not Minnesota, Vancouver. I apologize.
Okay. There we go. Now we're back to Tuesday. I was now thinking ahead.
I'm not saying. Yeah. So sorry, they're playing the second night in a back-to-back against Vancouver that, while, you know, 12th place and comfortably out, is 7-2-1 in their last 10 with a four game winning streak. So not necessarily the gimme slam dunk that I think that Stars fans would want at this stage, but you know, it's going to be a test, and we talked earlier, thank goodness, where would this team be without the Domi Dadonov trade if you all of a sudden take Tyler and Mace out of the lineup? So it's a good thing, not that they're hurt obviously, but it's a good thing that they went out and did some business at the deadline,
and it'll be interesting to see what Pete DeBoer does with lineups. I think Olofsson has the ability to play up. I think certainly Belandria moves up, and they'll be able to adjust after this game to see what needs to happen.
You know, the other thing I really like about the situation, just the way that this is about the way Pete DeBoer coaches. This is where I think the benefits of having such an even distribution of ice time really come to the forefront, because, you know, over the course of an entire season, you probably don't want to ride the top line 22 minutes a night, or Jamie Benn's unit 20 minutes. Over the course of an 82 game season, you don't want to be giving guys that kind of workload, but they've done such a good job managing minutes. Everybody's in that 13 to 16 minute sweet spot. They've done such a good job controlling everything to this point that if you absolutely have to kind of gut through a stretch by putting the pedal down on a couple of the higher end guys, you can maybe afford to get away with that, especially if, and we don't know about Marchment yet, but especially if you know that you're going to get Sagan back relatively quickly and you've got, you know, a couple of different pieces you can slot in, like you can be a little bit more, you can afford a little bit more short-term thinking to get through the crisis versus, you know, the old days when there were three functional offensive players, you had to ride them into the dirt. And if anybody got hurt, you know, haven't helped the squad.
Yep. And apparently we're getting Luke Glendening back,
oh, thank goodness.
So
I say it. I don't want to be mean to Luke Glendening.
It's scary. It'll be interesting to see how he fits into this new lineup. I'll just leave it at that. And other than that, we potentially could bring, you know, the cap situation's in a place where we could bring somebody up from Cedar Park as well. So
yeah, certainly it's and then worst case, you know, planning, even if everything does go off the rails, this is not a team that is hanging on the fringes of the playoff race. And, you know, it's not like every single point is critical to get the squad into the postseason dance. Right. So if it wobbles a little bit and that's what they need to get everybody healthy to set up for the playoffs, then okay.
Fully agree. I'll just keep my fingers crossed. I was at the Texas Stars game on Sunday and Freddie Karlstrom down with something that looked bad at the time. So hopefully this isn't something that's hitting organizational. We'll see. We'll see. Other than that, anything else?
You know, I'm not worth really getting into, but props to Denis Gurianov, scored again tonight. It looks like, you know, the change of scenery certainly is offensively working a little bit. It's nice to see him having a little bit of success, especially as the Stars also get to enjoy Dadonov fitting into the roster like a glove.
I fully agree. Other than that, happy Pi Day. Let's go watch the Stars win, cross my fingers, and we'll move from there.
You love to see it. Thanks for listening. KT, thanks for stitching everything together. Mark, as always, it was a pleasure. And yeah, I'm gonna go watch the Vancouver game, and we'll be back next week to talk about, I guess, the stretch run. This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.